Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Happy to have you all here. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We got some grades to give out. Harken back to my teaching days. We're going to give some grades out to JJ Redick and Luka Doncic on today's show. Of course, we'll be taking your questions and comments from those of you who are joining us live. But first, guys, let me hit you with this. The Cavs got swept last night. They looked like they had their vacations planned already, and they got absolutely dominated in Game 4 by the New York Knicks. Does that make LeBron James more or less likely to wind up going to Cleveland?
What's up, guys? It's good to see you. I have a very simple approach to this topic, and it's just someone's got to make LeBron a pitch as to why he should do this all again. And I think that goes for the Lakers as well. Like, imagine you're a successful person in your career and you've retired and you're in your mid-50s or your early 60s and you're ready to call it a day, but someone comes to you with the proposition of doing more work. They got to find a way to make it worthwhile. Maybe it's living in a good city. Maybe it's favorable work terms. Maybe it's a shit ton of money, whatever it might be. They do something that makes it worthwhile, and then you continue to go. Now, LeBron has that added incentive of being a competitor and wanting to compete. But frankly, like, I think if LeBron looked at the situation and he didn't think that LA had any shot to compete because they had a bad offseason, or Cleveland had no shot, the Warriors had no shot, I even think retirement is still on the table if LeBron doesn't think it's worth it. The only way that you're going to convince LeBron to go through this again is to make a case for him to why it's worthwhile. So for Cleveland, I think it centers around, like, if they have, you saw that pitch that was going around, like, oh, what if they move Mobley for Giannis and James Harden takes a pay cut? And it's like, okay, Donovan Mitchell, LeBron, and Giannis with Jared Allen. Like, I think that would be a compelling pitch to a guy like LeBron. And then all of a sudden the ball would be in the Lakers court to try to present LeBron with a better option. And so I think that really, in a lot of ways, LeBron has made himself valuable as an asset worth pursuing with how he played over the final third of the season. And I think that'll make it like a situation where these teams are incentivized to try to make a good case to him, a good pitch to him.
I think it makes it more likely that Cleveland pursues him, but I don't know if that will have any impact on how LeBron views the situation. And to Jason's point, I think there's a lot of moving parts with it where it depends on who's still on the roster. What does that look like? I don't think it would really make sense to have Donovan Mitchell, James Harden, and LeBron on the same roster, in my opinion. I think you're kind of in a similar situation to some of the stuff that he dealt with being the third option at times with the Lakers. And then if you added Giannis to that, I just think from like a usage perspective, that there's maybe a little too many chefs in the kitchen there. So I think at that point, like, you got to move off of someone, and I would move off of James Harden if I'm the Cavs, despite him saying that they were the better team. That some all-time Cavs quotes in this series. So you had Kenny Atkinson, when they're down 3-0, saying they analytically won two of the three games from a shot quality perspective. Then you had James Harden, after getting swept and losing in a do-or-die game by 40 points at home, saying that they were the better team. And then asked about his series, said that he played really well. It played really good defense in the series. So, like, just some all-time quotes from the Cavs in this one. But I would, if I'm like, if there's a way to get it, Allen, Giannis, LeBron, Mitchell, like, from a Cleveland perspective, I think that would be great. But I think it increases the likelihood they pursue him. I don't know if that has any material impact for LeBron, though.
Yeah, I think had they gone to the finals, they could look at things and say, well, we're good. We made it to the finals. Let's run it back. We've got something we're building upon here. And they tried to spin it last night as though, well, we took another step forward. We're moving in the right direction, that type of thing. You got swept and you didn't look particularly good in Game 4. In contrast to our Lakers, who went out there in Game 4, fought hard. They didn't ultimately win. So you could say both teams got swept. But the way the Lakers got swept was a hell of a lot different than the way the Cavs got swept. Now, obviously, one was in the conference finals and one was in the second round, but that Cavs team looked like they were completely out of gas at the end there. So you could say there's more incentive to make change, particularly when we're talking about the most expensive team in the NBA, which is what the Cavs were. to change things significantly this summer. And that could mean going after LeBron and bringing him back. I also think that there's an element of this where LeBron, he's going to want to have that equity built in with his fan base. I just don't know if I could see LeBron saying, I'm going to go play in front of Golden State fans for a season, or I'm going to go play in front of Knicks fans or whatever for a season that's going to be potentially my last. I think he's going to want to have that equity built in with the fan base. But I could see him going to Cleveland. I think the Cavs will be more interested in bringing him in at this point. How they get there, I think, is a real tough question for Cleveland to try to answer. From LeBron's side, though, at least now it's not like the Cavs went and won the championship and then you're getting like KD joining a 73-win Warriors team jumping over there. So I think
they need him.
Things up a little bit.
Do you guys, just a quick follow-up, do you guys think, would you guys agree that the bar for Cleveland, or for the Lakers to like clear in order to motivate LeBron to come back and play, is lower than it is for other teams? I think, like, at his age with his family, the idea, because, like, let's say LeBron does say, I'm going to play in Cleveland a year, there's no way Savannah and Zuri move to Cleveland,
right?
Like, they might come stay with him in some fancy condo he gets by the arena to stay in for the year, but like, I like, look, that is a business trip for a year, even if he goes to Cleveland. Like, at his age, I just think if the Lakers make even a moderately compelling case, like, hey, we're bringing back everybody and we have one move, like one upgrade at one position, I think LeBron would be like, yeah, I'll take my chances with Luka. Like, and you look out east, like, too, like, Boston's probably going to do something. They might even get Giannis, right? Like, you've got Charlotte on the rise. The Knicks obviously are a machine. There's some other team out there that's going to do something. Washington, I mean, is like one.
Pacers could be back.
The Pacers
could be back for sure.
Yeah, like I do think that the East clearly has an easier path than the West, simply because they don't have San Antonio and OKC. But I don't think it's as demonstrative as like you would think. And I just think in general the Lakers have a lower bar to clear. Would you guys agree with that?
I would agree. And there's also the financial component of, it's just easier for them to come to terms financially. They could offer him more money than any of those suitors realistically, unless those suitors move some big pieces around and clear cap space, or it's a sign and trade situation. So yeah, I would say between the bar that you're talking about of just adding to the roster, but it being at a certain level, and then also being like, hey, we could pay you triple the amount of the minimum or 10-15 more than the non-taxpayer, whatever that number ends up being. I think that there's a lot of I still think LA is the clear favorite to retain him. It's just a matter of how the negotiation goes, I think,
and how bad Donovan looked too. That's why, to Jovan's earlier point, like, I think Giannis, all of a sudden, it just becomes compelling. It's like, okay, Donovan, Giannis, LeBron, it becomes compelling. But the Lakers always have this, like, we have Luka, who's at worst the fourth best player in the league right now. And that, and just one of the very few guys who could stare down Shea in a series, or stare down Jokic in a series, or stare down Wemby in a series. I think that is, like, LeBron knows what he saw in March, and I think he knows that is really what you need to win in the modern NBA.
The East is certainly a cleaner path to the finals than the West, particularly with San Antonio and OKC in the West. But I look at, you dig into the metrics of James Harden and Donovan Mitchell, they are, defensively, they are what people think Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic are defensively. I mean, it's that bad defensively with those two on the floor. I do wonder if LeBron looks at that and says, yeah, I don't know how this is going to work out unless one of them ends up going somewhere else. And I do think the Cavs are in a very tricky situation with Mitchell, with his contract, where he's got reason to wait a year and hit his 10 years of service. They don't want him to wait a year, because otherwise he could be a free agent and some other team could go get him. I think there's some moving parts there in Cleveland that got to be figured out. I think it makes sense that they'll go after LeBron. I don't think it makes a lot of sense for LeBron to go back unless, like Jason said, they can present a real argument that, hey, we're going to be the piece that puts us over the top, but we're also switching up the dynamic here and we're getting Giannis, or we're getting somebody that's going to come in and change things significantly for us. We're moving on from James Harden. Doesn't sound like that's what they're going to do, but we'll see ultimately the way the Cavs play this thing out.
One more curveball.
Yeah, absolutely.
How much better is Donovan Mitchell than Austin Reeves, really?
I think, like, if you told me I could turn Austin Reeves into Donovan Mitchell right now,
Who would you rather have for the next 5 years, Donovan Mitchell or James?
I would rather have Donovan Mitchell.
What about at the prospective contracts? So, like, Mitchell on a max, like a super max, versus Austin Reeves on somewhere around 40, 45 a year.
So right now, Mitchell's going to make 50.1 next year and 53.8. He's got a player option, so we'll see what happens. Right. I mean, that's the
but he's going to get a new deal.
He's going to get a new monster deal.
Can I at least make the case for why it's complicated? Let me make the case for why it's complicated, okay? Donovan Mitchell is a mistake-prone defender, which is something that Austin is not. There's a certain amount of, like, any physically limited guard is going to get picked on, just like Donovan, just like Austin, just like James. Mm-hmm. But he's not very mistake prone. The other thing, too, there is a little bit of, like, a Donovan fills the box score, but for whatever reason, his offenses don't produce at a high rate kind of thing that's been going on for a couple of years, where there is a certain amount of, like, I think when you factor in, like, pure unstoppable scoring force, Donovan has a clear edge over Austin. But when you factor in, like, the game management, shot creation for a whole team, I think Austin closes the gap a little. I do agree that Donovan's a better player. I just don't think the gap is that significant. And when you look at the difference between paying him potentially a deal that could have a $70 million a year in it in the next deal versus paying Austin essentially a fraction of that, I'd like Austin becomes like a more like in my like I think Cavs fans would rather have Austin for like 4 years, $150 million, than Donovan Mitchell on like a $200+ million crazy ass deal.
So to give you guys the numbers here, should Donovan Mitchell say, I want to wait a year, and then I'm going to sign an extension, and then I'm going to sign a new deal next summer when I get to my 35%, my 10 years of service. That would start his first year of that contract would be at $60 million on a 35% max based on the projections for not this year's salary cap, but next year's salary cap. So do you want Donovan Mitchell starting at $60 million or Austin Reeves on a contract right now, with it, albeit on a lower salary cap this year in 2026, starting about $40 million? So you're talking about, you know, two-thirds the salary here for Austin Reeves to go get Donovan Mitchell. I get the conversation. I still think at the end of the day, though, Mitchell's just a better player than Austin Reeves is.
So I agree. I'm just saying I think the gap is smaller than people think. I think Donovan is an extremely mistake-prone defender. He's a mistake-prone defender who fills the box score in a way that doesn't necessarily lead to team offensive success. Like, there was a weird dynamic in the postseason with the Cavs this year where they were better with James Harden running the offense. Do you guys think James is a better player than Donovan? No, it's just James was taking the reads that the defense was giving him, and Donovan just knows one style, and that's downhill, pull up threes, force the issue. He'll have a game like Game 7 against Detroit where he passes the ball well every once in a while, but it's so not his style. And, like, it legit, like, ask Cavs fans how they're feeling about Donovan Mitchell this morning, and it's pretty dark.
Whose game ages better, Austin Reeves or Donovan Mitchell?
Again, I think Donovan's better. I just think Austin's game probably ages better relative to his natural ability just because he's less mistake prone. Like, Austin, very rarely are you going to lose a game because Austin didn't do his job. You'll occasionally see a game where Austin gets picked on, but that happens to every skill guard in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Jovan, you're conspicuously quiet in this conversation.
I'm collecting my thoughts here. I mean, what I will say, like, I think Donovan's been miscast as a number one. He's clearly not a number one on a true contender. And I think we've seen that there's a bit of a ceiling there where you can be in that 50-ish, maybe even low to mid 50s win total with him. You can make the second round. You can even make the conference finals and get swept and lose multiple games in embarrassing fashion. But if he is your number one, there's a real limitation there. So I do view him more as an elite number two But you have to go find that number one. It's not Evan Mobley. It's not James Harden. And maybe it's Giannis. I will say, if we are comparing these two, like I think something that could be viewed as like a hot take on this would be, I think Austin's a better passer than Donovan Mitchell. I don't even know if that's a hot take, but like,
yeah,
I think he's clearly a better passer than him. And that was a huge issue for, I think, Cleveland in these playoffs was, like, how many games did Donovan Mitchell have as many turnovers or more turnovers than assists? And wasn't even like high turnover totals necessarily, but it was a lot of like four turnovers, three assists, three turnovers, two assists. Like, you can't have that with your number one ball handler, right? And I know he was splitting it with James Harden to some degree. I mean, I think you could... I get what you're saying, like, from a contract value perspective. Would you rather have... It also depends where Austin comes in with the contract, but if Austin's making $35 million and Donovan's making $65 million, like, at some point it just becomes, would you rather have Austin at that $35 million versus Donovan at the $65 million? I'd rather have Austin at $35 million. I think if it's Austin on the full max and he gets the 5 years, $240 million, and now we're talking about Austin's having a couple of those years where he's at like $48 million or $51 million. And then maybe Donovan's still in like the 60 to 65 range. That level of a gap, I would still rather have Donovan. But if it is like Austin still on somewhat of a bargain or more of an appropriate contract, and Donovan's just kind of in this stratosphere where he's overpaid, then yeah, I think I would lean Austin in that case.
That's because it's really, the conversation is not Austin or Donovan Mitchell. It's Austin plus whatever you get with the gap between his salary and Mitchell's salary or Donovan Mitchell. So that's the thing. And that's where the context would certainly matter a lot in terms of the team and how that all looks and what you could ultimately do with that salary space. But it's an interesting thought for sure. Donovan Mitchell, a very, very good player. I think ultimately I land on, you feel really good if Donovan Mitchell is your second guy. I don't know if he's that 1A guy. With Austin right now, you feel really good if he's your third guy. I don't know if you feel locked in great if he's your second guy. I think that's the difference right now between Donovan Mitchell and Austin Reeves. But when you factor in the salary, that's where it becomes an interesting conversation. So
I'm going to nail you guys down on a pick here, because I just find this really fascinating.
Okay.
So just bear with me. So again, we discussed this exact proposed swap a few weeks back. I was like, would you guys trade Austin for Donovan? And we all said yes at the time. Mm-hmm. We all said yes, but that was before this playoff run. Let's pretend the Cavs sign James Harden on a discount, get underneath the aprons. They're in position to potentially structure a trade. Would you trade Austin Reeves for Donovan Mitchell, knowing you would need to extend him at a massive number?
Yes. I would make that trade.
My answer,
knowing that I would have to give him the extension. You have the same defensive concerns with Donovan Mitchell and Luka, but I think your ceiling offensively is so much higher.
I'm going to go with no. What about you, Jovan?
So, I mean, I thought about this even, I think I talked about this on my show even a few days ago, and I was at a yes, but the more I've sat with it, I'm leaning, I guess, if, like, you know, metaphorical gun to my head, I would say no. And it is less to do with Austin and more to do with Donovan. And I don't know, it would be different if it was like, if the Lakers number one guy was Giannis or a different position, I think I would be more open to Donovan. I think Donovan's the number two in a certain context. I don't like Donovan as the number two at that salary on this team. And I think there's also an open-ended question here. Like, we're talking about him metaphorically as a number two. Like, does he view himself as a number two? And can he show the ability to actually scale down into that role? Because he has been the number one usage guy basically since he stepped foot on an NBA floor. Like, I think Austin has shown an ability to scale into different roles and play off of the ball, I think, at a higher level than Donovan. Now, Donovan's obviously, if we're talking like number one creator, just hand the ball to someone, I would still take Donovan 10 out of 10 times over Austin. But
of course,
when you're actually thinking about like role and fit and also factoring in contract, that's where I think it, to me, I would lean on the Austin side, especially if that contract basically becomes at some point like Donovan making like double the amount of what Austin's making. I don't think there's a gap to that level.
Yeah, there's also this weird thing where you can't hit a catch and shoot three anymore for some reason, which would
be insane. The other thing.
Yeah. Like he did have, that's the weird thing too. Like I do think Donovan's stock is kind of lower than usual, just stemming from the fact that he had kind of a rough playoff run, but he's also getting older as a guard who's kind of reliant on explosion. And the issue in this playoff run kind of looked like he lost a tiny bit of a step by some sort of small injury. And it's kind of a glimpse of the future in a lot of ways. I guess I just don't think Donovan's the right number two for Luka is, I guess.
I would agree with that. I mean, if he fully embraced like the Kyrie Jalen Brunson role, then I think he could fit into that. He did shoot 41% on catch and shoot threes this year. So like, I think that's been one of the things I've continued to harp on when we talk about that role, is it's not just like being that secondary shot creator, being that guy that can run pick and rolls, attack out of ISOs. It's like, Jalen Brunson and Kyrie Irving during the conference finals and finals runs respectively, both shot 40%+ on catch and shoot threes. Like you need to be able to keep the defense honest and make them pay. And Austin has not been able to do that so far. These last three postseasons, he's had really rough 3-point shooting series. So that's like, I think the final thing for him is he's got to shoot better. Like if Austin's going to be a playoff dropper in terms of his shooting, that does complicate things. And that does lower the Lakers ceiling, because if he's a low to mid 30s 3-point shooter on catch and shoot opportunities, like there's just a limitation there.
It's interesting. It's like Donovan Mitchell was a playoff dropper this year as well. We look, I mean, the Cavs were a minus 13 with Donovan Mitchell on the floor and James Harden not. And it went the other direction. They were, I believe, a slight net negative, like less than a point net negative with James Harden on the floor compared to Donovan Mitchell. He really
struggled. It was positive before last night's game. Yeah.
Which, I mean, absolutely crazy, right? That's the way it went from when James Harden is the one who's known as like the guy who really struggles in the playoffs. And it's not to say he played great, but it's more of an indication of how bad Donovan Mitchell was in these playoffs. So I think we're right that in this moment right now, as we sit here today, we're probably talking about Donovan Mitchell at a downswing compared to where he may be if this were, you know, middle of January or something. We're having this conversation pre-trade deadline.
There was a weird thing with Donovan last year, I remember in the postseason too, where like when he was on the floor without Garland, even though he was putting up massive numbers, the offensive rating wasn't there for the team. Like it just was, there have been some like weird data points with him, but I'm sorry for dragging this out for so long. I just find it fascinating as like a philosophical debate. Cause in theory, let's just to kind of frame the discussion as we head into the offseason, like there could be a trade that pops up at some point in time for some star that involves Austin as the primary chip attached to draft compensation to try to bring in the number two for Luka in the future. And so it's worth at least considering what that framework looks like. And I think Donovan's kind of an interesting like case study, because again, that won't be the deal, but it's an interesting case study for what that kind of deal could look like. But I'm sorry for dragging it out.
No, you're all good.
I would say if the Lakers are trading Austin for a second star, that player should have a baseline level of defense, athleticism, and not be like a 6'2", 6'3" guard who needs the ball to be at his best self, right? Like I just think between him needing the ball and some of the defensive limitations there, I think that's where it, for me, especially at that price, right? Like if he's making even what he's making now, I think it's a different story. But if he's starting out at 60, that means he's going to be hitting 70 at some point in a 4 or 5 year deal. Yep. And most second options are not being paid $70 million. So
I think you'd be perpetuating the same problems you have potentially with Luka and Austin, just with an even more expensive player with Donovan Mitchell, albeit a better player than Austin Reeves. But the key would be, could Donovan Mitchell's passing get to that next? Because right now Austin's the better passer between the two. It'd be keen to get to that particular level. And you're right. If you're going to trade Austin Reeves, and if it's going to be a sign to trade, it's going to be next season, you sign him to a contract and then you move him mid-year. Ideally, Donovan Mitchell would not be the stylistic choice for what you're looking for in a player, to in a superstar to add to Luka. You'd want somebody that is a super athletic, high motor, two-way player, play both sides of the ball, ideally a wing, could be a big. Either way, you're looking for somebody that can do those things, that really can be successful on or off the ball. And right now, Austin's probably closer to that, being a better off-ball player than Donovan Mitchell. But I still think in the dream scenario, there's probably a different player archetype that we're talking about trying to add to Luka Doncic, if that's ultimately the way we go.
So are we saying we don't want to mimic the Brunson Kyrie build?
No, I think you do. I just think if you can do it, I'd like to take that second guard and have that be a lower salaried player. Not, it's I'm not talking about a veteran.
You're giving Rob Pelinka the freedom to draft a combo guard now, Trevor. You got to be
careful. No, do not draft a combo guard. I'm saying I'm trying to think of an example of who would fit in that role. But ideally, you're looking for somebody that you could bring in that can play both sides of the ball, that can defend, that isn't necessarily just this super high level offensive creator, but can hold things down for you in a pinch. Like, for example, would the Lakers be better off if Austin Reeves were I don't know. Let's say Jaden McDaniels, and in your backcourt with Luka was Ayo Dosunmu to take a couple players from the Wolves. Are you a better team overall in that scenario?
I think I would go the other direction and say, like, compare Austin's salary to some of these other top tier guards, and what you could potentially, like, if you get Austin on a deal around $40 million in the new CBA with the new media rights deal, with the ability to then have a third star that is a defense two-way kind of talent. Like, because that's where I get tricky is, like, I think about how important, like, Brunson won a playoff game for the Mavs against the Jazz with Luka out of the lineup with a calf strain. Mm-hmm. There was Kyrie Irving was incredible in the Timberwolves series, especially, and really throughout that playoff run. Like, he was vitally important. Io's not doing that. So, like, there's a certain amount of, but the question is, can Kyrie do that, or can Austin do that too? I think that's a fair question for the record. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a believer in Austin, but he hasn't shown consistency in the playoffs yet. But I think that I would almost look at it more from the standpoint of, like, Austin is the guy who can be the number two that doesn't make 60, 65 million in 2 years and then leaves more salary space for you to target two-way talent, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does. So that's
I just looked this up. Donovan Mitchell, the last five postseasons, is shooting 32% on threes. Now, Austin, the last five, dating back to 2022, Austin, the last three, is shooting 29%. So Mitchell is still higher than Austin, right. But obviously a lot of those are, you know, more on ball shot creation, pull up threes. Like, I would be curious to break that down into a catch and shoot, but I just think you need a key ingredient that I think people overlook. Like, I think that player archetype can work next to Luka. It has worked next to Luka with the conference finals and finals appearance. I think it worked at times this season between Luka and Austin. I know we'll get into that in a second, but I think the catch and shooting around Luka with that secondary star is vital. And I think that's one of the biggest things you can knock Austin on. But I don't, like, Donovan Mitchell might be slightly better at that, but I don't know if that 3% increase on 3-point shooting is worth $30 extra million.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, let's hand out some grades, guys. Let's use this to kind of springboard. Let's just go into Luka. Let's springboard into the Luka conversation, then we'll finish with JJ. Luka on the season obviously led the NBA in scoring. I saw the stat was getting regurgitated, re-aggregated, whatever, bouncing around this morning quite a bit, that Luka not only led the NBA in scoring, if you remove free throws from every player in the NBA, Luka still led the NBA in scoring. How do we feel about the season that Luka had? Clearly, he had a peak in March where you could argue he was the best basketball player in the world. He also had some down months, had some injury concerns. Season ended April 2nd due to injury, was not able to participate in the playoffs. Guys, how do we feel about Luka's performance over the course of the season?
Quick question. Are we grading him on the top tier superstar standard, or are we grading him, like, compared to just like any other star?
I think you have to. If you're an MVP candidate, if you are one of the, we're calling him one of the top five, top four, whatever you want to call it, best players in the NBA, you're not grading anybody on a superstar standard unless you're grading Luka on a superstar standard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to go first, Yovan?
Sure. I think based on what you just said, I'm probably going to be higher on Luka. But I mean, so I think I would give him an A for me. If you look at statistically, like, this was arguably the second best season of his career. And I think the part that complicates it was like there were some lows, and I think we got some valuable insight into the lows in December and the off-court stuff he was dealing with, and I want to give him some grace with that, and that was a real thing that I'm sure played a big role in his December numbers being low. But I mean, this guy, to your point, like 1-2 player of the months, his March was maybe the best single month a player had the entire season. And I think, I mean, just to look at his numbers, like 33.5, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, nearly 37% on 11 3-point attempts per game. And again, it's right there in line with that 2023-24 season. So I think it was clearly at worst the fourth best player in the league, but you could argue higher. And it was a first team NBA guy, MVP ballot guy. I just think to me, like this was, we had seen the flashes from Luka post trade last season, right? And I think he had a pretty solid, like, by his standards, solid close to the season, but he wasn't, I don't think, ever quite back to like that 2024 level. I think he had some flashes. He had like in OKC, and he had some really big games and down the stretch of that season. But this year it was like coming out of the gates with the averaging 45 the first three games in October, right? And just like all the moments he had throughout the course of the season where he reminded, like, I'm that dude and no one can match me offensively from like a ceiling perspective. I think that to me, in LA winning more games this year, LA going further in the playoffs. Now I know he was out for the playoffs, but like, I think just overall helping put them in that position, like he was the driving force behind that March stretch, right? Like we could give JJ a lot of credit. We could give LeBron a lot of credit. We could give Austin credit. We could give the supporting cast credit, but like Luka was the driving force behind 16-2 and just having that awesome March. So, I mean, if we're grading on like the highest of scales, like you could talk me into an A-, I guess if we're saying like relative to Shea, Jokic, Wemby and some of maybe the lows he had in like December or February. But I think overall I would go with an A.
So I thought of it from the perspective of the top tier superstar standard. So like, let me just rank all of the top four guys to kind of give you guys some perspective. Like I would view Jokic as about a B. And then Luka as about a B+, and then Wemby at about an A, and then Shea at about an A+, in terms of just the way that I look at them relative to the superstar standard. And again, like if I'm ranking him compared to any other, like just in general against every other max contract in the NBA or people who make over $40 million, Luka's an A+. Of course he's an A+, because I thought he had the third best season in the league this year. I thought he was the third best player behind Shea and Victor. But when I'm talking about the top tier superstar standard, it's just something that I've always thought, like when you're one of those guys, and there's always just been a very small select few in the entire league that have been given this level of respect. It's usually just, you can count them on one hand on any given year in most cases. There's like a certain amount of like, you're just so much better than everybody that you have the most ability to help a team to rectify a situation. And it really just comes down to me. It's to two things. It's less to me about the downsides of the down stretches of the season, you know, where he played poorly for a week or two here or there. It comes down to that stretch in March was that level that I could make the case Luka's the best player in the world. That was like the one stretch of the season that I really thought Luka had a good case for that. Whereas like Wemby and Shea, there were multiple times during the year where you're like, oh my God, is this guy just better than everybody? And the last piece of it to me is just quite simply the availability to your team. And I think that, you know, this is a big part of what hurt Jokic. He got hurt in the middle of the year. And then when he came back, he just wasn't the same player. Really, from the time he came back all the way through the loss to Minnesota, it just looked like a lesser version of Jokic, which is a big part of why, for me, Jokic is below Luka in this case. But specifically for Luka, he took a big step forward this year in the way that he cared for his body. And he looked faster and more explosive than he did last year by far. But I think there's another level that he needs to get to there, because when you're discussing Victor Wembanyama and you're discussing Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in the context of all these guys who are breaking down, and there's dudes breaking down all over the league, and you hear about the different attention to detail that guys like Wemby and Shea have and the way they care for their body, it's just clear that Luka is giving some ground there still. And it's something that I think that is the next step for him. And so to make the last thing I'll say to put a bow on it is I think we're going to get an A+ season out of Luka next year. And I think it's going to involve him being in even better shape than he was last season. This season that just happened. I think it's going to involve him being healthy and available to play in the postseason. I think it's going to involve him playing like it's March for most of the season. And to me, that is a step up from what he did this season. And I want to quantify that in some way. And so from going from a B+ this year to an A+ next year is the next leap that I expect from Luka as he continues his kind of like redemption tour from the Dallas fiasco.
So I think those are good thoughts. And I think that when we look at Luka and what he did over the course of the season, we're talking about can March, what we saw in March, and really this is also a team conversation for the Lakers, can what Luka did in the month of March, can what the Lakers did in the month of March be sustainable over an extended period of time, or can they get anywhere close to that level of play? And I do think as much as, you know, Jason, you say, well, it's on his body has got to be in better shape, and I do think there is truth to that. I also think some of that responsibility lies upon the Lakers themselves in the front office to expand the depth of the roster, because when I look at the month of March, it's not just that Luka was playing fantastic or the team was playing fantastic, they were also playing their guys super heavy minutes. And that's where I wonder, is he physically capable of playing the way he did in the month of March for an entire season if the minutes stay, if the workload stays at that level? That might be where it's a bit of a challenge, where if you can add depth to this roster, that takes some of the pressure off of Luka to play whatever 37, 38, 39, 40 minutes on some nights. You go into overtime games, he's playing even more to log that many minutes. You can chop that down. Maybe his stats drop down a little bit, but in terms of his efficiency, in terms of his impact when he's on the floor, that can be replicated from the month of March if he's got the right support around him. Personally, I'm going to give Luka an A- on the season. And the only thing that I'm taking off here for is the availability, because he appeared in, what was it, 64 games, I believe it was, that he played on the season. So that's the only thing that I'm taking from Luka here. It's just that he didn't play enough games over the course of the season, getting hurt at the end. That's the only thing that I'll take away from him. I thought that defensively, when we look at Luka compared to his first stint as a Laker right after the trade to what he did this season, light years better defensively. Doesn't mean he's suddenly a great defensive player, but much better effort on that end of the floor. It did wax and wane at times, but still we saw a lot more instances of Luka, instead of getting blown by on the perimeter, sliding his feet. He did especially a good job cutting off baseline drives, did a nice job sending guys back to the middle. I thought rebounding wise, he was a major factor on the glass for the Lakers. And of course, everything he does on the offensive side of the ball. And I know people will look at Luka and they'll make this argument that, well, it's not pretty though. Aesthetically, it's not pleasing basketball. Well, it's all about efficiency, right? And look, basketball is a beautiful sport, but when we look at the efficiency, people will say Luka is this ball hog. He was in the 92nd percentile when it comes to points per possession, 95th percentile relative to his position at the rim, 93rd percentile on the short mid-range. He was an absolute killer everywhere on the floor, 96th percentile in mid-range shots, period. And even when we look at the turnovers, when you factor in his usage, he was even pretty solid there when it comes to turnovers. Even though he had 4 per game, his usage rate is through the roof. So he was still in the 98th percentile when it comes to turnover percentage. So I think you saw what you needed to see out of Luka. Some of it, yes, is his body. He's got to continue to work on that. He made great strides last year, and that can increase his availability. Some of that, though, has to be put on the Lakers and the roster construction to take a little bit of the burden off of him and the heavy minutes off of him so that he doesn't have to be playing quite as much. And then maybe we do see a healthier Luka. But I thought it was just a phenomenal season from him. Again, A- for me. And the only thing that I'm marking him down on is just the total number of games played.
We've said this on the show before, but what we saw in March was to me the most exciting thing to happen for Lakers basketball since LeBron signed with the team. Like, Luka coming back, he immediately, when he joined the Lakers 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, looked just like a ballooned up version of himself. And there was just clear lack of explosion, a clear lack of that just top tier burst. And Luka's so weird because he fills the box score extremely well. And so it's always hard to tell the difference between LeBron was like this in his prime too. But I just thought March was the first time where I was like, this is the guy that can win you a championship, even against other great teams. And like seeing that just an extended stretch where, and I think the specific difference is like his ability to strangle, like grab games by the throat and strangle the offense down the stretch of a game or in pivotal stretches of games, maybe to start a game, to finish a game or a big run in the middle, where he just sucks. He has this ability to suck the life out of the other team. And really get the entire arena behind him and cause the other team to lose confidence. And just, it's that Luka magic that we saw, you know, literally for the first time back when he did it to the Suns in game 7 back in 2022. Just seeing that in March was like, oh yeah, that's why this dude is literally one of the greatest prospects in the history of the sport. And just getting to see that level out of him again, to me, like, just it made an otherwise precarious Lakers future seem so much more tenable. You don't need to have an overwhelming talent advantage when you have a player that good. You can't. He is capable of closing the gap if Rob makes one or two savvy moves. You like that. That's the type of player that he showed he was, and I just think that that's super, super exciting for the future of the team.
All right, let's get to JJ Redick and his grade. But first, we're going to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check out Prize Picks. Super easy. The link is in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. Obviously, we've got a pivotal game 5 coming up between the Thunder and the Spurs. I am really excited for that one. Guys, to me, the no-brainer, I've just been continuing to do this one. I think this is easy. 11.5 points for Steph Castle. I'm going more there. That's the no-brainer for me. You guys see anything that you like?
Shea over, right? I mean, Shea's due for like the like, especially with the coverage change and how it's more emphasis on him as a scorer. What do you think, Jovan?
I can see it. I think that's a good line. I think go down. I feel like Chet is due for. Chet needs to show. I mean, Webby's averaging
I like
more than
Chet
double.
Better, actually, yeah.
Chet, Webby's averaging more than double the amount of points, rebounds, and blocks than Chet through the first four games. So it's like Chet, he's flying under the radar from a criticism perspective because everyone's talking about SGA, but it's like Chet needs to be much better and much more aggressive offensively.
Agreed.
But I keep thinking, why can't he just go like score on Luke Kornet when Luke Kornet's on the floor? Or like he's being guarded by Julian Champagne a lot. Like, why can't he just post him up and go get a bucket? There's a lot of the Chet stuff that has been bizarre in this series. I like that pick, Jovan. Let's go with Jovan's.
All right. We'll go with Chet. Steph Castle, Chet Holmgren, $10 entry fee, win you $20. You guys want to get in on it, use that code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly. And thank you to Prize Picks for sponsoring the channel. All right, guys. JJ Redick. Grades on him. Jason started on last one with Luca, and so, or what was the other way?
I started.
I don't know. Jovan started. Jason, why don't you start with JJ Redick?
So I would give JJ an A. And I think one of the main reasons why I look at JJ's job as the job well done this season is what the team looked like relative to expectations. I think coming into the season, there was a little, I was a little more optimistic than most. Like, I figured they'd end up around 50 wins just because I think people were overthinking the difference in the roster between this year and last year and how successful they were last year. But like, I think a lot of us just kind of looked at this as a team that didn't really have much of a ceiling, that didn't have much ability to compete with the top teams in the league. And that clearly showed, like, to me, a team struggling against the upper level teams in the league is a reflection more of talent. Whereas the team performing well outside of that context is a reflection of the coach. So like another team that kind of had a similar type of example, in my opinion, is Boston. Like there was some weird data with Boston all year where it was like they struggled against some of the top teams. And it's like they're a machine. They're churning out regular season wins. They're putting together good advanced metrics. But then they end up in a first round series and they lose to a seven seed because Embiid's just so much better than Tatum and Brown in that matchup, and they just couldn't keep up with the talent level, right? And like I think the Lakers, if you look at, like, we talked about them all year as a team that was devoid of athleticism, devoid of defensive talent, devoid of jump shooting talent. Like we looked at this all year as a severely limited roster, and they were a four seed in the West, very easily could have been a three seed if San Antonio didn't tank their last game. They had positive margins, which I think is valuable. Like they were positive in points off of turnovers and positive in fast break points, and big positives in those two categories post All-Star break. That to me is a reflection of the coach, just like driving advantage in areas outside of that strict kind of half court environment. And then again, that stretch in March where all of a sudden they started beating the good teams, and it like turned into a team that was starting to achieve at a higher level than even what they did over the course of the rest of the season. There was a steady kind of like trending up in the way that the team performed. He navigated injury concerns really well. I'm sure Jovan will point out, like, it wasn't perfect. There were times where the starting lineup lingered a little too far into the season. Like, it wasn't a perfect job. But I thought,
a little too long. A little too long.
But I thought he did a good job with a relatively limited team. The team had a strong culture. He got buy-in down the roster. Mm-hmm. I think that overall, as a team, they've taken dramatic leaps forward. And the last thing I'll say is, like, beyond the culture stuff, the margins, the attention to detail, the habits, the next thing that you're looking at is game plans. And I think game plans can get a little tricky because, like, you just play the results. And the example I always use for this is the 2022 finals. You go, oh, well, you guarded Steph Curry in drop coverage. And, like, yeah, I agree that that probably wasn't the best option. But there's a version of that series where you blitz Steph Curry and they beat you in 4-on-3s. Game plans all have things they take away and things that they concede. And sometimes you get beat in a game plan and sometimes you don't. And I just thought JJ did a good job kind of like managing the dynamic of like the best possible way to guard the teams that they were facing in each round, and adjustments in late rounds. Like, for instance, in the Houston matchup, like getting away from doubling Şengün so much towards the tail end of the series. Like, I just thought JJ did a really good job managing the team tactically and managing the team as a leader, and has dramatically improved the culture of the Lakers over the course of the last 2 years. I think he's one of the most talented young coaches in the league. I think he deserves an A for this season.
You're talking me into it, because going into this, I was at an A-, and I think I'm going to stick with an A-, but you could certainly, like, I would say it's a high A, so I guess, like, I haven't been graded in a long time, but I guess like a 93 would be like a high A-, that's borderline A or whatever. Trevor, you would know better than I in terms of what's on that cusp of A-, but for me, I would almost view it as, like, to me in the regular season it was more of a B+ A-, in the playoffs it was an A+. I think he, and that to me is more important, and that to me, like, he showed so much growth in the playoffs compared to last postseason, in my opinion, with how much quicker he made adjustments and the initial game plan. I thought the game plan, like, it took Houston almost three games to adjust to the Lakers, right? And the initial game plan that they came out with. And then obviously Houston got some momentum in the middle of the series, and the Lakers made their counters to that. With OKC, I thought he threw the kitchen sink outside of maybe going a little bit more zone in that series against OKC and Shea. And, like, I think he did an awesome job, squeezed all the lemonade out of the lemons in the playoffs. To the regular season, I do think that there's an element of, like, the Lakers' results were ahead of the process, and I still think about, you know, up until late February that they were 4-13 against the top 10 teams in the NBA. And not only did they lose a lot of those games, but they were getting shellacked in most of those games. And, like, part of that, I do agree with Jason that, like, most of that has to do with the talent disparity and maybe some of the depth stuff between the Lakers and some of the other top teams. But I do put part of that on the coaching as well. And like there was this element, like the Lakers were such a conundrum at times, because on the one hand, they had this incredible resilience where we would see in like the clutch, they were awesome. Right. And arguably the best clutch team in the NBA. There's an element of like resolve and mental fortitude, but then they also had these games where they would just completely let go of the rope and just get, you know, the game would be over in like early second quarter and you would just tell like Lakers are down 15, like they're not coming back, that this game is effectively over. And like, I don't know how to separate like some of the coaching with that versus some of the player stuff with that. But I mean, if I had to nitpick a little bit for me, what knocks it down from an A to an A minus, he clearly stuck with the Rui over Marcus stuff for far too long. I understand like last year that was a positive lineup. They started the season off well. They add in LeBron. They want to see what this group looks like. They had some injuries, so they weren't able to fully assess it. But I thought by like game 8, game 10, you need to be adjusting that more like sooner. And it's just at some point you're bleeding points in the first quarter. That was one of the worst high usage lineups in the entire season. And like all the other lineups around them were lottery team lineups. It was like them and like, you know, the Brooklyns and the Indianas and the Washingtons. And like, they should not have had a lineup that was starting and playing as much as it did. That was that bad. And the fact that whether it was politics or whatever it was, he couldn't navigate that better. I do hold that a little bit against him. I think some of the young guys stuff didn't really make sense to me, where like Drew Timmy's playing well and they're getting some success and they pull him out of the lineup. They signed Kobe Bufkin, don't play him. Like there was just some, you know, a dude what was just there and not getting an opportunity. Like there's some little bit of stuff with that. I also think the offense overall was a bit of a disappointment, even with the injuries, where like defensively, I think they punched above their weight all season, especially later in the season. Offensively, I don't think this group has ever clicked fully to the level that we would want outside of March. But I'm nitpicking here. Like, I think JJ, to your point, to me, he's clearly a top 10 coach in the NBA. He's knocking on that top five door. I think he should have gotten more love for Coach of the Year. And what he's been able to do through the first couple of seasons, like, I'm very bullish on JJ and where he's going to be next year, where he's going to be in year 4, where he's going to be in year 5. Like, I think this guy is going to be considered a top 3 to top 5 coach within the next year or two. And I think he's awesome.
I'm glad you finished that the way you did, because I was sitting there thinking, man, Jovan really doesn't like JJ right now.
From day one, I was high on, like, I mean, run back the tape on, like, I wanted the Lakers to hire JJ. I was advocating for that. Like, I've been high on JJ. I'm just, for me, there were some things that, like, I don't think the Lakers are maximized from a process perspective throughout the season. And I think that's reflected in like the net rating stuff. Like some of that stuff, I just think like they won a lot of close games, which like on one hand is a coaching thing. And you give credit to the guys for closing games out. But like there was a lot of, they got their asses kicked, I think a little bit too much for my liking.
Yeah, for anybody's liking. I mean, right, they certainly had those games where they let go of the rope. They struggled against the high-pressure defensive team. Some of that, I think with JJ, it's kind of like what we were talking about with Luka a few moments ago with, you know, how much of it is, well, the workload that's on Luka versus Luka and how much better he needs to do in terms of physically preparing his body. How much of it is the roster JJ was given versus JJ's own choices? For, you know, he made the comment, paraphrasing, but something around I would have used more depth if I had more, you know, it's the 10th through 15th guys on the rosters, what we're talking about. We're talking about going deeper into rotations and all of that. I'm curious to see with a truly optimized lineup, what would JJ do? What would that ultimately look like with him? I think if you were to give the Lakers truth serum right now, though, I think they've got to be thrilled with what they've gotten out of JJ Redick. And I think context is something that's really important with him. We have to remember this is his second year, not as an NBA coach. This is his second year as a coach, period, right? Across all levels.
Pretty good job.
Right. He's the strides that he's taken as a coach have been significant. And I'll tell you why. I'm ultimately, spoiler alert, I'm going to give him an A-. And that's simply because of what Jovan's been talking about with the blowout losses that we saw over the course of the season, sticking with the starting lineup a little bit too long that he shouldn't have. Those reasons are things that I'll hold against him just a little bit. But I'll tell you what, the two biggest things that he had to get right, the two biggest, holy shit, we have to figure this out right now, we're in crisis mode situations, he nailed it out of the park. And these were very difficult and very delicate situations that he had to handle. Number one was the transition from LeBron being a number one guy to LeBron being it. People get too wrapped up in it, but in terms of the pecking order, who had the ball in their hands, the usage, all that between LeBron, Austin, and Luka, the transition that they made right after the All-Star break and moving over more towards LeBron in that complementary role on the offensive end, recognizing that both was it more of a need that the ball be in Luka and Austin's hands, but also that LeBron was by far the most capable guy to be a high impact player while being off ball, nailed that situation. And that's a very difficult situation for a guy who has played a certain kind of way for the majority of his career with LeBron James. And so for JJ to navigate that, job well done there. And then, crisis again. Luka and Austin get hurt, what, a week and a half before the playoffs start? Both guys hurt? You've got to revamp the way you're going to run things. You've got to change your rotations. You've got to put the ball in the hands of different people. You're going to change up some of your offensive schemes. Your defensive responsibilities change. And he goes into the playoffs, and he's got his team looking like the team that's been doing this all season long compared to a Houston Rockets team that looked like they couldn't figure out which way was up. I give JJ, I look at those two moments as the biggest moments of the season where JJ, the coach, has to step in and really make the correct calls. And I thought he did on both fronts. So I give JJ a lot of credit there. I think the Lakers got to be thrilled with what they're getting out of him right now. Again, an A minus, but that minus is a very, very minor one here in this. I'm really excited for the upside for his growth as a coach. And I want to finish with this. The way the team played game four, yes, they got swept, but the way they played showed a team that is bought in, showed a team that believes. We have seen the opposite of that in these playoffs from other teams. I was happy to see the way they responded there. That's telling you that's a team that is very much still listening to their coach, that believes in what they're doing. I think he's got buy-in from the players as well. So I'm thrilled with where JJ is as a coach right now. I think the trajectory is heading straight up, and I'm excited to see where this is going to go with him.
Totally agree. Great point about that late season surge. Like, the way he managed it, like from a mental health standpoint, the way he came to the guys and was like, "Hey, I totally understand why it like crushed you guys for a few days, but like, hey, it's time to refocus." Like, it was just very empathetic to the situation. Just, you could tell he's just learned a bunch of lessons already from his first couple of years doing it.
For sure. For sure. All right. We have enough time to get to a couple of chat questions here, and then we're going to run. I will save these. We will put them into another show. Let's go to Mamba Mentality here, who said, "I want to ask the panel, would you do this trade? Austin Reeves and 25 for Max Christie and 9. Lakers draft Ede Mara. Pros, LA gets 2. I'm not far enough still. I keeps getting pushed back. I'm not far enough into my draft prep to have a good sense of that. LA gets 2 young athletic guards to start. Luka in the center of the future. Con, you lose Austin Reeves, your second best player. Your thoughts, guys?
Well, I don't think these two teams are going to trade with one another.
That's true.
I just don't. I think this is selling low on Austin, and I don't think the Lakers would do this. I've long said my understanding of their view of Austin is they want to trade. If they're going to trade Austin, it's going to be trading up, not trading down, in terms of they want to trade Austin for a better player, not a worse player. And so I don't see them doing some sort of cost-cutting move. Like, I mean, this is a cost-cutting move, right? Like, you're obviously taking on more salary, 9th versus 25th, but Austin versus Max, that would give you some more flexibility. But I think, let's say, like, you retain LeBron, now you're going into next year with Luka, LeBron, and a bunch of role players. I just don't think that's as good of a top end of the roster. You'd have to find a way. Like, I think the thing I will continue to say on the Austin front, if you want to get rid of Austin, that okay, like, come up with the trade, come up with the situation, but you need to replace Austin with another high level ball handler and playmaker and usage guy. I think if the Lakers just flip Austin for a big or a forward who can't do some of those things, the drop off, I mean, we saw the drop off in ball handling from Austin to Marcus and to Luke. And like, they could do it for a couple games, that they could do it until the scouting report was out on them. And then all of a sudden both those guys really struggled. So sure, I mean, maybe you could, I think you could find a guy that's in between Marcus and Austin, but I do think as we talk about like what works next to Luka, having a high level guy who can get you 20 plus any given night, 5 to 7 assists every night, I still think you need that around him. And so if you lose Austin here, you have to go find that. And I don't know that you're finding that in free agency or on the trade market.
Put a lot on that 9th pick to really hit. Would have to, mm-hmm.
You're going for a center here anyway. So it's like, I mean, the drop off from Austin plus 25 to Max and Mara in terms of like ball handling, passing, playmaking, shot creation, that's a massive drop.
Would love to get Max Christie back, but probably not like this. It's an observation here. When Jason is making a good point, he gets really close to the camera.
Oh, no, this is just called my back hurts all the time. And so I alternate between leaning on my desk and then sitting back and then leaning on my desk. It's just, yeah, I'm way too old to be playing as much basketball as I play. And so I hurt all the time. That's how it goes.
Getting old sucks. All right, we'll finish with this one. Jaylen Brown to the Lakers. Just kidding. Kinda. He'd be great. He'd be great. I think if Boston's going to move him, though, it's going to be in a deal for Giannis, and it would
rerouted from Milwaukee.
Hey, that was going to be Draymond, right? Was going to get rerouted from Milwaukee to LA, but I doubt that the Lakers. Now, if you could, wait, let me ask you guys this. If you obviously you'd have to be a sign and trade or whatever. If you could give up Austin Reaves to get Jaylen Brown, you're doing that, right?
Yes.
Easy.
Yeah.
Right, easy.
Jaylen Brown, I think he'd be one of the best. Donovan Mitchell.
Exactly. One of the best number two fits next to Luka in the league.
Yeah, he checks all those boxes in terms of secondary shot creation and defense and athleticism and all the things.
Do you think Boston actually moves him this year?
I think it's on the table they move him for Giannis. I don't think they should, but I think it's on the table that they do.
You'd rather have Jaylen Brown than Giannis in Boston?
Couple of specific things. Yeah, Jaylen Brown is less than 2 years younger than Giannis. So right. the gap isn't as much as you think. Although I do think it's worth mentioning that Jaylen's been more like healthy. But I mean, Giannis, most of his health issues have come over the last couple of years. So you could just as easily flip that and say, well, what if Jaylen starts to have health issues? But I think where it gets complicated is the idea of like, okay, well, what if I play Giannis at center. Now all of a sudden I don't necessarily need a center. I could bring back Vooch at a discount. I have Tatum at the four. I have the ability to play some of my younger wings at the two and the three. It's exciting, but I just think if Giannis gets hurt and you lose in the first round, it's a tough sell to Celtics fans if Jaylen Brown is like leading a playoff team in Milwaukee or something like that. It's just a very complicated decision. And I think Giannis will be 32 years old at the start of next year's playoff run, and change. I think he turns 32 in December. So like, I think the Giannis contingent of teams needs to be pretty desperate. It's really only the Wemby, Chet, Isaiah stuff that makes it somewhat fascinating to explore for other teams that are more desperate for talent.
Yeah, I think we're talking about, well, I don't want to get in a big conversation about improving the Celtics because God forbid, but putting force on the rim, I think, is something that Giannis can certainly provide at a different level than what Jaylen Brown can. That said, if there was a way to make him a Laker, absolutely, he'd be a fantastic fit for LA, but I think it'll be interesting to see who ultimately gets Giannis, and if it is Boston that goes ahead and makes that move. All right, I'm just going to real quick. Zion and a shot blocker, big risk, high reward. I just don't see Zion as a good fit with the Lakers. I'm assuming you guys are with me on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Zion is tantalizing, but like it's just so difficult to even imagine a team build that works with him.
I think it depends who you're retaining in this theoretical trade, but I also just think the Zion, Luka, like building the right defense around those guys that you just have to nail the other positions. And I know he's saying a shot blocker here, so it depends who that shot blocker is. But I think as we're seeing with OKC and San Antonio and New York with their primary rotation, like you want to have as many good defenders as possible in the modern era with conference finals level basketball. And like, I just don't know that Zion right now fits into that.
This right. comment from Matt or Zion has a literal fat contract.
It's true. He does. Last thing, I just want to get your guys' thoughts. This trade aside, this is Vando, DA, Dalton Connect, picks, Nick Claxton, signing Peyton Watts. I really just want to get your opinions on Nick Claxton. He's one that I'm having a hard time. I've been looking at centers for the Lakers roster. I'm having a hard time landing on whether or not going after Nick Claxton is actually worth it, like where he is and how he would potentially fit. Like, would you feel like you were getting your center for the next 5 years with Luka if you were to go land Nick Claxton? I want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, after watching this playoff run, I just don't think he's good enough to compete with the centers in the West.
No, but I also think if you look at the current options, I don't know that there is, with the exception of maybe Walker Kessler, Durin, I guess, but Durin has his own question marks coming off of. But I don't know if you're getting a center for the next 5 years anyway. And I think the Lakers might be in a situation where it's more of like a, do you have a 2 to 3 year window here, at least with like this core iteration of the team? And then 2029, 2030, you're building a new iteration of the team. Like they don't have the stockpile of young assets that OKC and San Antonio do. So I think just by nature, like it is going to be a little bit more of a mercenary build here if they're so. He wouldn't be my top option. I would go Kessler. I would go Durin. You could throw Gobert in there. You could throw in Jared Allen. But if you strike out on all those guys and it just comes down to, would you rather have Nick Claxton or DeAndre Ayton next year? I know what the DA ceiling is. The DA ceiling is you're going to run into San Antonio or OKC and you're going to lose because DA is your starting center. I'd at least want to see what that looks like with Nick Claxton.
I think the big question would be, what's your opportunity cost? And that's an unknown, right? What if you're giving up what you're going to have to give up to get Nick Claxton? What are you not able to add to the roster elsewhere because you're getting Claxton? And then is that ultimately
what about like this one specific? Like, I don't think they would give up more than a pick for Claxton. I don't think they're giving up 2 firsts for him.
No, I wouldn't.
But then I guess you also say, like, if you're putting in Vando, I don't know, is it a first and a second, a first and a swap, something like that. But let's just say it's a first for argument's sake, like Vando, DA, Dalton, a first for Claxton. I would do that. And then if you have the flexibility to sign P-Watt, like if you go into next year with Claxton, LeBron, P-Watt, Austin, Luka, that's a much better starting group.
You're getting the added value from Vando being negative, taking him off your books too. Plus his Connect really, he's at best neutral value, maybe. And that's on a $4.2 million expiring. So, yeah, I think you can make an argument for doing something like this. I just wouldn't be moving mountains in order to go add Claxton to my roster.
Sure.
All right, everybody. I appreciate all of you for joining. Super chats that we didn't get to, we will get into next show, or we'll do a show in between. Happy to see y'all here, though. Guys, this episode was a blast. Got to hand out some grades. Got to talk a bunch about Donovan Mitchell and the Lakers and all kinds of stuff that we got into today.
It was good to see you guys. Looking forward to Thursday.
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll be back on Thursday. Till then, everybody, make sure you hit the subscribe button. Turn on notifications as well. See ya. And stay safe.